9:05 in the morning. This is the Senate State Affairs Committee. Today's date is February 10th, 2011. With us today are Senator Pasvan, Senator Meyer, and Senator Giesel. And Senator Kukesh is excused. We have three bills today before us. The first is Senate Bill 39, ratifying an interstate compact to elect the President and Vice President of the United States by popular vote. Second is Senate Bill 18, which seeks to extend the length of the legislative session every other year. Final bill is Senate Concurrent Resolution 2, which proposes changes to the uniform rules. We will begin with Senate Bill 39, sponsored by Senator Hollis French. We heard the bill on February 1st and listened to testimony from a variety of individuals in support of this bill. Since then, there is we have received one additional piece of testimony, a letter from Ms. Tara Ross of Dallas, Texas, who wrote in opposition to the bill. The letter was distributed to the committee over email yesterday. I see Senator French's able staff, Andy Modero, is here with us. Would you please come forward, Andy? Put yourself on the record.
Absolutely. Thank you, Chair Wilikowski. For the record, my name is Andy Modero, staff to Senator French.
Do you have any final comments on this bill?
Happy to answer any questions if there are any.
Are there any questions for the bill sponsor? Senate Bill 39. Seeing none. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Do I have a motion to move Senate Bill 39 from committee with attached to our fiscal note and individual recommendations?
Sure. I would move that Senate Bill number 39, I believe we're / A version, be moved from this committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Is there an objection?
I object.
Can I get the committee secretary to read the roll, please? Well, first, is there any discussion on moving the bill? I would just note. Can I just 1 second? Under committee discussion, I would just note that the bill has two additional referrals. This is not a vote in favor of the bill or opposed to the bill. This is simply moving this bill onto the Judiciary Committee and then onto the Finance Committee if the Judiciary Committee so decides. Is there any committee discussion? Seeing, yes, Senator Giesel.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just for the record, I want to make comment that I'm very concerned that Alaska's voice will be lost if we went to a popular vote method. You know, in our 2010 election for Senate, for U.S. Senate, this was a huge election. People turned out, but still, only 256,000 voters voted in that very large election. 52% or so of our voters. For the presidential election in 2008, we had 326,000 voters. When you compare that to 16 million voters in New York State, about 12 million in New York and Florida, you put our few hundred thousand in the pool and our voice is lost. The Electoral College was designed to give small rural states a voice, and I'd like to preserve that voice. I think that this would be a bad thing for Alaska.
Any further committee discussion? Can I get the committee secretary, I'm sorry, to read the roll at this point?
Okay. Senator Pasvan?
Yes.
Senator Meyer?
Yes.
And Chair Wilikowski?
Yes.
And Senator
Giesel? No.
And with that, the bill moves on to the next committee. Okay, we'll pass around the sheet, and I would ask all the committee members to please sign that. Okay, next up we have Senate Bill 18, which would extend the length of the legislative session every year. The bill is sponsored by Senate President Stevens. The committee originally heard this bill on January 27th, including a very informative presentation by Senator Stevens' aide, Tim Lampkin. At the conclusion of that meeting, we held public testimony open to provide more opportunity for interested Alaskans to weigh in. Before we go into public testimony, I'd like to invite Senator Stevens forward to provide any additional comments. Welcome, Senator Stevens and Mr. Lampkin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity to address you on this subject again. A couple of comments I'll make, and then I'll turn it over to Tim Lampkin, who will go through a lot of the details. But, you know, I don't want to be necessarily a waving the Constitution here, but I would read to you a very brief part of the Constitution on page 11. The legislature shall adjourn from regular sessions no later than 120 consecutive calendar days from the date it convenes, except, and it goes into an extension. But that's what the Constitution says. That's what the founders of our state believed, and that's what they wrote into the Constitution, 120 days. It's the courts have interpreted that to be actually 121 days, but we won't argue that because I'm not sure I understand why. It's a very complex issue. But yet, there was a vote of the public through the initiative process, and you should understand, you should know that many, many pieces of legislation have been introduced over the years to reduce the legislative session. Over 20 have been introduced. None of them have made it through the legislature. For various good and valid reasons, the legislature has said, well, we have concerns about reducing it from 120 days, what the Constitution says. None of them passed. None of them made it through the legislative process. Many legislators fell through that process that we simply could not get the job done in less time, and they were concerned about whether the public could be adequately heard in less time. Lots of reasons, and probably not my job to try to understand why people would support the 90-day legislation, the initiative process. But as I look at some of them, I can't help but think that there were some selfish reasons there to go to 90 days from 120. There were some self-serving reasons. It was convenient for many people to be here less in Juneau, to get back so they could run their businesses or hotels, so they could spend more time in retirement at their condos. Lots of reasons people supported this that I don't think particularly valid. I do believe this gives power, more power, to the governor and to the administration. And I don't think we're able to do the job we were elected to do when we do that. I don't believe it's working. As a member of the Resource Committee last year, Chairman Wilkowski chaired that, co-chaired that, and often he had to tell folks that you only have 2 minutes to speak, to cover an issue that is very important to you. You only have 2 minutes. So we cut folks off. We really circumvented the process. Now, I've gotten some really nasty emails. You may not have, but I have. I'm trying to find it. I threw it away, but I should have kept it. But this one said, you're a bunch of crooks. You're there for the wrong reasons. You're not doing your job. Every time you pass legislation, you're doing something bad for Alaska. Stop passing legislation. Stop being there. Go home and don't be legislators. Well, the Constitution doesn't say that. I don't think people of Alaska really want that. Our job is to do the right thing here and to do the right thing for the public. Not what's convenient for us, not what helps our lifestyle, but yet what is good for the public in Alaska. As I've talked to many of our colleagues, they have said they like the 90 days. They like being home. They like being with their family. They like attending to their business. If they're retired, they like to spend more time in retirement, more golf, more whatever. But many of those same people, as they have said that they like the 90 days, have also said, we're just not here enough. We're not able to do our job properly. We don't have enough time here in session. So even though many people in the legislature like the 90 days, they're not sure that it's the best thing for our state and for our constituents. As you may know, if you've read the papers lately, the governor opposes 90 days. Actually, the governor opposes 120 days. He's in favor of a shorter session. I understand that. I think every governor that's ever served the state of Alaska would like to have shorter legislative sessions. It means that we're here less. I think they want us out of town. I think we ask too many questions. That's a great thing about being a senator and a legislator. You can ask questions. You don't have the answers, but you can ask the right questions and demand the right answers. It's our job to keep the administration the fire to the feet of the administration. It's our job to represent the people. Nobody in this legislature, I can guarantee, knows as much as I and my representative do about Kodiak. Nobody. The governor doesn't. Nobody else knows as much about my district. And you can say the same thing about your district. I've lived there for over 40 years. I think the voices that we bring to this legislature are extremely important, the way we represent our public. A lot of details that Tim Langford will go into, the cost, the number of candidates that run, the reasons for, I think, this initiative being on the ballot, really, in my estimation, don't hold up. So what's the right answer? Well, I don't know what the right answer is. I introduced this piece of legislation because I want it to be discussed. I want it to be talked about. I wanted you to have an opportunity to change it any way you think best. And anything you do to it is okay with me. If you decide it should be 100 days, or maybe it should be, maybe the first session should be 120 and the second 90, or the first 90 and the second 120. I think the important thing is that we have that discussion. What is our job? How do we best do it? Does 90 days shortchange the public? I heard a former Senate president say that his goal was to leave the legislature in as good a shape as he found it. I really like that idea, and we need to do that. We need to leave this legislature in as good a shape as we found it, not, I think, in the weakened condition it is now due to this 90-day session. So I don't think it's working. I think you need to go back to the Constitution, see what the Constitution says. Part of our job, many elements of our job, part of it is to protect the institution that we serve, the long history and traditions of this legislature, and I think we've done some damage to it. I think we have, and this is our opportunity to do it right. And at this point, I'd be glad to answer any questions or turn it over to Tim Lanigan for some specifics.
Thank you for that very compelling testimony, Senator Stevens. Any questions? Yes, Senator Meyer.
Just one, and thank you, Senator Stevens, for that presentation. It was very convincing and very compelling. I'm just wondering, you know, I have not talked to any of the folks that helped write our Constitution, but I don't know how they arrived at 120 days, to tell you the truth, because it used to be we didn't have a limit, and maybe that's the answer, just, you know, take as many days as you need to get the work done, if it means 160 or if it means 90. I don't know. But have you had an opportunity to talk to any of the folks that wrote the Constitution to see how they arrived at is it say up to 120 or is it say 120? I don't remember.
No, it says the legislature shall adjourn from regular session no later than 120 consecutive calendar days from the date it convenes.
Yeah. Do you know how they arrived at that number?
Well, that's a very good question, Senator Meyer, and I think Tim has an answer for it. But if I could go back and the other issue that you brought up is, why don't we just start and then stop when we get things done? The problem with that is, and I don't think I saw this for many years. I've been here now 11 years, and for many years I didn't really see the planning it takes to get to the end. And if you just have it open-ended, it's going to be a lot harder to get to a conclusion. We know right now we've got 90 days. We know in the past we've had 120 days. And so the way bills are managed, the way leadership tries to structure things to get to the end, the way finance works, we really do need to have an end in sight. I think having no end in sight would really be disruptive and it would be very hard to get our job done. So I think whatever it is, whatever the magic number is, whatever the best number is, we need to decide that and head for that as a target. And then realizing sometimes you have to extend if necessary, and the Constitution also allows for that, a 10-day extension if necessary. And I think Mr. Lampkin could answer your question a little bit better, Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Chair. Senator Meyer, the original founders of the Constitution, there was no limit placed on a legislature. From statehood to about 1973, the average sessions during the state's infancy, mind you, was about 70 session days, calendar days. Once we hit the pipeline days, from the mid or early 70s up until 1982, as I presented to you the last hearing here, it spiked up in the neighborhood of 170, 180 days, and that was a trend that the public recognized as unacceptable, and it was in 1984 that a constitutional amendment was placed on the ballot, and they passed it to become 120 days at that point.
Thank you.
Other questions? Tim, was there anything you wanted to present to us today?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Tim Lampkin, staff to Senator Stevens. I just had some supplemental information to share with you since our last hearing here that I thought was relevant and also very interesting to point out that during the vote that took place, and you'll want to remember this number, that the session vote passed by 3,843 votes. Statewide, there were 238,000 total cards cast, total voters that year during the general election. There were, however, only 231,507 cards cast for ballot measure one, and therefore there were 6,800 people who took a ballot but yet did not vote on ballot measure number one. And that's just begs the question as to what those folks might have been thinking. Now, you could go anywhere with that that fact, but I'd like to submit that perhaps those folks felt that this was a decision best left up to the folks that were involved in the workload or under the strain of dealing with all these issues, and therefore it's something that should ultimately be left up to the legislature itself to decide. Now, another interesting thing to point out is this is a chart that was passed out liberally to garner folks to sign the petition that would launch the initiative, as well as to compel folks to vote in favor of shortening the session. It stated 27 other states have shorter sessions than Alaska, and I point out to you that there were several – oh, goodness. There were several states – my pointer's not working – but several states that you know, they highlighted Montana and New Hampshire, Hawaii, and so forth. However, there's an important distinction here between calendar days versus legislative days. And the distinction there is that, for example, currently the Senate convenes and gavels in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Those are counted as legislative days in a 7-day calendar day period. So when you look at that chart more carefully, it was, in fact, what they were toting was that those states just said days of session. When, in fact, for example, I went back and looked for, since 2002, all 50 states, the past 9 years, what was their average actual days in session? At what point did they convene in their legislature and remain in the Capitol doing the state's business to the time that they adjourned, signed, die? Alabama, for example, was 102, where they're stated they have 30 and 105 legislative days on odd and even years. Hawaii, there it was toted they have 60 legislative days. However, since 2002, the average number of calendar days is actually 106. Indiana, another state where they've got 60 legislative days, 30 legislative days, odd and even years respectively, where they've got on average 131 actual calendar days. And then finally, perhaps the most outrageous example, I didn't want to go through them all, didn't want to poke too many holes in this data, but Tennessee was where they've got a 90-day session, supposedly equivalent to ours, but in fact, since 2002, 146 calendar days. So it just kind of goes to show you that it's depending on what side of an issue you want to argue for, it's easy to spin your data and convince folks to choose to vote one way or the other accordingly. But again, here's an average look at, again, since 2002, all 50 states, the actual number of calendar days that they have been in session. We, again, are still pretty much in the middle. This, since it was stopped at 2010, that mixes our days between 120 and 90. If we, over time, we would, of course, slide further back as we get closer and closer to the 90-day average, and that would place us around 33rd or so. But again, we're looking at other states. Every state has their own sets of reasons to choose to operate the legislature the way they do, and in this case, we make the point that who cares what other states are doing? We're pretty much in the middle on this issue, and Senate Bill 18 would slide us even closer to the middle. One other last thing I'd like to share was methods by which other legislatures limit themselves. The vast majority of states use their constitution, where it's ensconced there. Also, a few states, of course, Alaska should be listed under both. We have both statute and constitution at this point. There are three states that use a chamber rule, and that is to say that when their leadership gets together at the before session, they decide and have it pass a resolution in both bodies that we shall adjourn on this date. Very interesting, and this perhaps would be take us on a tangent, but the indirect method is very interesting means to entice legislatures to wrap up their business. Indirect method would include, for example, it's the main example, is that they limit per diem. On day 105 or whatever, legislators are no longer eligible to receive per diem, and therefore that seems to have been quite a motivator for them to close up their business. And then, of course, 11 states have no limit whatsoever. That's not to say that they can't, they don't meet all year long, but they don't have a limit imposed on them. So, in conclusion, once again, our Senate Bill 18 strikes a compromise. And thank you for your testimony, or for your being here.
And I just want the record to reflect Senator Davis is here. She has been here since the beginning of the hearing. Thank you. Questions? Senator Passman.
You know, if you could expand a little bit more on the difference between legislative days and annual days so that the viewing public can better understand when you talk about gaveling in, so that I think that deserves a little better explanation so that that's better understood.
Thank you. Through the chair, Senator Pascan. A legislative day would be when the Senate or House is actually on the floor debating bills that would then vote on a bill. The calendar days in between those sessions would be when we do our committee work, essentially. So, for example, the Senate convening Monday, Wednesday, and Friday to gavel in on the Senate floor would be counted as a legislative day. The Tuesdays and Thursdays would be just simply calendar days. They would not go against the actual legislative day when, for example, we're talking about Tennessee. When you're not called to order by the Senate President and Speaker of the House, that is not counted as a legislative day.
Other questions? Okay, thank you. We have a CS before, so I'd ask you just to stay right there for a minute. Is there backslash version B? Do I have a motion to adopt this as our working document?
I would move that we bring the committee substitute for Senate Bill 18 backslash B version.
Thank you, and I'll object for the purposes of discussion. Tim, could you describe the differences between the original bill and the CS?
Mr. Chairman, the CS simply corrects a drafting oversight to make the effective date 2012. Therefore, the next session, next year, would be the beginning of a 120-day session for it being an even year. It was just simply an honest error, the oversight. When we had the bill drafted, we didn't intend for it to begin on 2013.
Questions? I'll remove my objection. Is there further objection to adopting backslash B? Okay, seeing none, backslash B is adopted. We also have two possible amendments to the CS, and Tim, could you describe those?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you might recall, those of you that were here for 120-day session, when currently, as the statutes are after the initiative, so forth, we are to convene our legislatures on the third Tuesday in January. And so if we have a 120-day session, that's going to push us deep into May, mid to late May. With the logistics of the Juneau's economy, particularly the housing market and the strong presence of tourism and the huge wave of tourism folks that are employed in that industry, it would be wise, I think, for the legislature to try to wrap up its business earlier in May. And so this would restore an earlier provision where we would convene earlier in January so that we adjourn earlier in May. Now, there's an option, of course, too, that perhaps we would consider, that's amendment number two. We don't necessarily, shouldn't try to adopt both of these, but one of them at least that would consider us convening every year on the second Tuesday. And that I've, in the summary there that I've written for you, would indicate when we would adjourn respectively.
So, for the people who are watching at home, or in the building, we have B1 and B2. So B1 says legislature shall convene a first regular session at the Capitol on the third Tuesday in January at 1 p.m. and the second regular session on the second Tuesday. So what B1 would do is basically move the start of the session up 1 week.
Correct.
And B2 says legislature shall convene the first regular session on the second Tuesday. Right now it's the third Tuesday?
Correct.
And shall convene the second session on the second Tuesday. So B1 simply has the first session the same as it is now, the second session on moving it up a week. B2 convenes both sessions 1 week earlier.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Is there committee discussion? Is there and this is, if we adopt one of these amendments, doesn't indicate that you're supporting the bill. It's just simply procedural issue. Yes, Senator Meyer.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm trying to remember, again, why we do have the staggered starts. It seems like if it's the year of a governor's race, then we start a week later, and then otherwise we start a week earlier. There's some rationale for the different start dates.
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, we have sort of pinged and ponged the start date over the years. I think most recently, prior to the ballot measure that shortened us to 90 days, was a Senate bill that had a start on the Tuesday rather than the Monday because of Martin Luther King Day. There was also consideration for during gubernatorial years that to allow more time for the incoming, if it's a new governor, more time to prepare his or her budget. was an accommodation made for the executive branch. Arguably, there are other folks that are more directly responsible for writing that budget that are embedded in the administration, and you could argue that regardless of a gubernatorial election or not, perhaps that second Tuesday is still sufficient time.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further discussion? What's the will of the committee? Is there a preference on adopting one of these or keeping the bill the way it is? Yes, Senator Passman.
If I could maybe ask the bill sponsor, is there a preference within the two amendments that has been thought through by the bill sponsor as to which of the amendments might be better suited for the operational aspect of running a legislature?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Personally, I think I prefer the first one. I think what it does is recognize the housing market and the tourist industry here in Juneau. I think most of us, once we get past New Year's, whether we start a week earlier or a week later, it probably doesn't make a lot of difference to us. So it seems to me the first one would be preferable.
Amendment B?
Right.
B.1.
Okay.
Well, I'll make a motion that we adopt Amendment B.1, and I'll object for the purposes of committee discussion. Is there any committee discussion on that? I'll remove my objection. Is there further objection to that adopting that amendment? Okay, seeing none, Amendment B.1 has been adopted. Okay, before proceeding any further, we did not close public testimony at the last hearing, and I'd like to give anyone an opportunity. I don't know that we have anyone signed up to testify. Is there anyone online wishing to testify? I don't hear anyone. Is there anyone in the room wishing to testify? I don't see anyone. With that, we'll close public testimony. Do committee members have any final comments or questions? Seeing none, can I get a motion to move CS for Senate Bill 18, Version B, as amended from committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note?
So moved, as amended.
Okay. Any objection? Seeing none, the bill is moved out of committee. Thank you, Senator Stevens and Ms. Farnke.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks, Chairman. Mm-hmm. We'll take go off the record very briefly while we allow the Senator Davis to come forward, please. Record. We'll now go to Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 2, which proposes amendments to the Uniform Rules of the Legislature. This resolution is sponsored by Senator Davis. Welcome to the committee, Senator Davis, and I see you have your staff member, Mr. Obermeyer, here. If you could please come forward and put yourself on the record and give us an overview of your resolution.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, and to the members of the committee. I'm Senator Betty Davis, Anchorage District K. I'm here to present to you today SCR 2. I just want to make a brief statement, and then I'm going to turn it over to my aide to read the statement and also say who's present, who wants to testify, and answer any questions that you might have at a later time. First of all, I want to say I'm grateful for the opportunity to be here before you this early in the session. This is a bill that I think could be very helpful to our 60 members in the legislature. It would be a way to increase the leadership positions without taking away any of the duties of the present officers that we already have. I've heard lots of rumors about this resolution and that it should not come forward. I think this is a good time to have a discussion on it. I know that we could all six of us get in a room and probably decide where we want to go forward with this or not. But as I talked to individuals about it, I was getting mixed emotions, and I thought the best thing to do was to bring this before the body as a resolution for you to discuss it. And we've already prepared another CS that you have before you. Many of you probably haven't had time to look at that. We'll get to that later. In this particular position that I am trying to add to our leadership would be a speaker pro tem. You all already know that at the time of an election, when we were getting ready to replace the Speaker of the House or the President of the Senate, there is a position in there that says a temporary pro tem would preside until they decide who's going to be the present speaker or the president. And that is the only duties of that particular position. What I would like to see, and I know many other states are doing it, throughout the U.S., there are 31 speaker pro tems in 31 different states. And there are 43 presidents pro tem in 43 states. Now, that is a place where it would be possible for a woman to move up into leadership, give her one more spot to fill. If you look at our present positions the way they are now, there are no women holding any of those positions. But this is not a position that's trying to be just created just for a woman to have, because out of all the speaker pro tems they have, only 8 are women in the on the House side out of the 31 positions that they have. And on the Senate side, 13 out of the 43 that they have. So it may be male or female holding this. I'm not asking that it just be strictly for females only, but it's an opportunity for them to strive to fill one of those positions. I feel that it would strengthen our legislature to have that extra person on. It's not to take away anything from the Speaker of the House or the President of the Senate, neither the majority leader who fills in if the President or the Speaker feels they want them to do that. And this position, if we do it the way I have envisioned, it would be left up to the Speaker or the President of the Senate to decide what additional duties that person would have other than what's written here in the bill. And I have passed out some information, I hope that you have it in front of you, that shows you the various capacities in which the speaker pro tems or president pro tems have filled based upon what was given to them by their leader in the House or the Senate. At this time, I would let my aide read this statement, and then we'll go and have you ask any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Senator Davis. Mr. Obermeyer, welcome to the committee. Please put yourself on the record.
For the record, I'm Tom Obermeyer, aide to Senator Davis. In prefacing this, I might note that this bill we've been working on really since last summer, and Tam Cook, the previous director of Legislative Services, assisted with the first draft. Doug Gardner, is now in the room. He's present in the back if you need to ask questions about the current draft. And Brenda Erickson, who is from the National Conference of Legislatures, is online. She's the program principal, legislative management program of NCSL, that you might be able to ask some questions of as well. As to the sponsor statement, let me go through it briefly, and also if you have any questions about the sectional analysis, most of the bill, of course, is contained in Section 4. This is SCR 2, proposing amendments to the uniform rules of the Alaska State Legislature relating to the presiding officer pro tempore. SCR 2 amends Uniform Rules 1 and 4 to increase the roles and responsibilities of presiding officers pro tempore. The term pro tempore is derived from the Latin phrase for a time. To make the titles more consistent throughout the rules and to recognize increased status and duties of presiding officers pro tempore, in the leadership of both houses, Sections 1 and 2 of Uniform Rule 1 changed the titles of temporary presiding officers to presiding officers pro tempore and permanent presiding officers to regular presiding officers. Section 4, Rule 4, Uniform Rules, is amended to, and establishes that in the absence of both the regular presiding officer, that's the Senate President or Speaker of the House, and in the absence of the majority leader, the presiding officer pro tempore previously elected in Uniform Rule 1B serves as the presiding officer pro tempore. The result of the language amending Section 4 of SCR 2 in the original bill is that the presiding officer pro tempore is elected at the start of the first session of a legislature in addition to the presiding officer pro tempore's duties set out in Uniform Rule 1B. They will continue for both sessions to serve as a backup in the absence of the regular presiding officer, president or speaker, and majority leader. These changes effectively create a third permanent position in the leadership without changing the president leadership structure. The regular presiding officer, the majority leader, and the presiding officer pro tempore may temporarily relinquish the chair to any member. These changes in the uniform rules mean that in addition to the few minutes of prominent duties, honor, and high visibility assigned to the presiding officer pro tempore to help organize the houses at the beginning of every two-year session, the presiding officer pro tempore may function in the capacities delegated in the absence of the regular presiding officer and majority leader. If you have any questions, we will try to answer them.
Thank you. Questions for the bill sponsor, Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for the presentation and the information provided. My question would be, having spent most of my career down here in the House, especially this year, they have done exactly what you have suggested. They've made a new leadership role for a female, Representative Wilson, but they refer to it as a majority whip. And I guess my question would be, why not majority whip versus the pro tem as you suggest? Not that it matters. I mean, we can call it whatever we want to. In fact, I know there was a couple years there where a lot of activity was going on in the Judiciary Committee, and we decided to make the Judiciary Committee person at that time was Representative McGuire in leadership. Basically all it takes, well, in the House it took a vote of 21. You could make anything whatever you want to, and of course on the Senate side here, we could, with the vote of 11, we can make Senator Pascavan our new Senate president. So I think maybe your intent here is just to formalize the process, but I'm not sure it's necessary.
I would like to speak to that.
Yes, please, Senator.
Thank you very much. As far as the majority whip, that's a position that's already available to us anyway on both sides of the House. The House is utilizing it at this time, and we're not necessarily doing it on our side. I suppose that they have. You could have a majority whip, you could have a minority whip. I want this to be a part of the structure that's in the uniform rules, and that's nowhere that speaks to the majority whip or minority whip within those rules. And that's why I chose pro tem, because that's widely used throughout all the 50 states. So no, I'm not interested in it, and I have no problem with them taking that position. I really don't know what Peggy's position is. You say she's the majority whip for,
yes, that's correct.
And they give them various duties. I've served as majority whip just that one time that I was ever in the majority, way back when I was in the House, those 2 years, first 2 years I was here. And it has not been utilized, but I don't want that title. I want the title that I have presented.
Okay. Thank you.
Other questions? Senator Diesel.
Is there a fiscal note to this bill?
Hopefully there is, but Mr.
O'Brien. We don't have it.
We don't
it's
have
not
it.
Prepared yet?
No.
Okay.
If I may, Mr. Chair, I wouldn't see where this would have a fiscal impact.
I didn't think so.
Well, of course I'm new, but does it not give the person with this designation additional staff?
Senator.
May I speak to that? That would depend on the leadership on what they would do as far as the staffing and all. And so it may or may not impact it, but there is a financial committee assigned to this. It goes from here to judiciary and from here there to finance. And they were determined at that time, we'll have the note if there is a note. But it probably be very small if it was a note on it.
And I would just add, this is a resolution. This is proposing amendments to the uniform rules. So resolutions don't typically have fiscal notes.
Thank you.
There could be some impact if we change the uniform rules, but this passing this resolution would result in no direct fiscal impact just because it's a resolution only. Other questions for the bill sponsor? Okay, seeing none. We have before us a committee substitute, a CS, backslash M. Do I have a motion to adopt that as our working document?
I move that we bring the CS for Senate Concurrent Resolution number 2 version backslash M before this committee.
And I'll object for the purposes of discussion. Mr. Obermeyer, could you tell us the difference between the original version and backslash M?
Yes, through the chair, the CS was essentially rewritten to recognize that we didn't intend in the first draft to imply that we were going to create a new position that might supersede the existing structure in the houses. We wanted the existing structure to stay as it is with a president of the Senate and a majority leader, and then this would be a third or a backup position rather than a superior position, because in many states, in fact, the president pro tem is the next person down. And I will mention for the record, and we have an expert online from NCSL on this kind of issue, but in about half the states, the lieutenant governor is the president of the Senate. And so the titles will vary. You'll have the president pro tems in the other states. But this position is really much more popular, really, than I had anticipated when we first started studying it. And while Senator Davis noted there are only about 25% are women in the Senate and about 30% in the houses, I think it's a significant number, and it's something that we could look at as well. That had also been an issue that had been raised as this bill was being produced. But the CS itself is really the intent of the language we want now, to keep the existing structure in place, but to create a permanent third position that might be afforded more duties than presently in the structure on the floor, however it might be, any duties that might be delegated.
Okay, there's an objection to backslash M for the purposes of discussion. Is there any further discussion? I'll remove my objection. Is there any further objection? Okay, seeing none, we have backslash M is before us. We have Doug Gardner from Legislative Legal Services online if members have questions.
He's here.
He's in the room.
Oh, I'm sorry, Doug. Any questions for Mr. Gardner? Seeing none, you're off the hook. Is there anyone online wishing to testify?
I'm Brenda Erickson with the National Conference of State Legislatures, and I would be pleased to answer any questions if there are any from the body.
Any questions for Ms. Erickson? Seeing none, thank you for being available for us, Ms. Erickson. I don't see any questions.
Thank you. It is my pleasure.
Anyone else online? Okay, hearing none. Is there anyone else in the room wishing to testify? Seeing none, close public testimony. Senator Davis, any last words?
I appreciate the fact that you've heard this, and if there are any unreadiness or concerns that you have, I'd like for them to be stated to me so I would know what position I have or what concerns there might be. I'm open to suggestions, but I see this as a simple process that we could move this one along to the next committee, and I would encourage you to move it to judiciary.
Thank you. We're going to hold the resolution just to give members an opportunity to get back with you or to have additional public input, And I want to thank Senator Davis and Mr. Obermeyer for coming forward and presenting this resolution.
Yes, Senator Meyer.
Thank you. And I too, appreciate you bringing forward this resolution. I think the discussion is good and it's necessary. But I would like just to put on record, I think women in particular have done very good on the Senate side. I'm just reflecting back on our Senate presidents. We had Senator Drew Pierce, Senator Jan Fakes, and then here recently, Senator Lyda Green. So I think for such a small body of 20, I think the women we've had have been good leaders.
No doubt about that. They have been good leaders. Mr. Chairman, if you allow me to say something.
Yeah, please.
I'm not knocking the fact that women haven't had an opportunity to be Speaker or the President. There's a lot of things that haven't happened, and most of the positions have been filled on the Senate side. Out of the 20 that we have over there, there's on the House side, they've had a speaker, one female speaker. But there's a lot of work to be done. But this resolution has nothing to do with that. When you look at the total number of women serving in this legislature, all the states, we're about in the middle of the pack. So we're about number 25 out of 50, as far as the number of people that we have serving. There's work to be done in that, but that's not something that I want to present before you as a committee. That's work that has to be done by the community and other people to make sure that we increase those numbers. This position wouldn't necessarily increase those numbers, but it would be very beneficial to have an extra spot there that one might choose to strive for.
Very good. Thank you.
Other comments or questions? Okay, seeing none, with that, we're adjourned.